One of the thrills of travel is being able to connect with the history of ancient civilizations, even getting cozy with stones that were carved hundreds, maybe even thousands of years ago. Today on Travel with Rick Steves, we're following the Inca Trail in the Andes of Peru. We'll also admire the accomplishments of the Ottoman Empire in Turkey and learn some of the bright points of the Dark Ages from the many castles and evocative ruins you can visit in Wales. Machu Picchu is one of the most famous ancient sites in the world, and for good reason. Tucked away in the Andes Mountains, the magnificent Incan city of Machu Picchu, it's a classic adventurous destination. Its remote location means that it survived the centuries amazingly intact. It takes 3 days to hike there through a cloud forest in the Inca Trail, and it's become very popular, and it's actually starting to put the ancient site at risk. So there's a lot of interesting issues here, and we're going to talk about Machu Picchu with the author of The Lonely Planet Guidebook to Peru, Carolina Miranda. Carolina, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's just set the context here. If you were a Spanish conquistador and you stumbled onto the Inca people in the 1500s, what would you see?
Well, I think you would see one of the most remarkable civilizations in the world. By the time the Spanish arrived in the 1520s, the Incas had conquered pretty much almost the entire Andes from Colombia down to the middle of Chile. They managed cities all over the Andes and the coast, and they had more roadways than the Roman Empire at its apex. So this was a highly developed civilization with a great deal of technological know-how. They would terrace mountains for agriculture. They built roads. They had fantastic textiles. And so you're really looking at one of the great civilizations in the world.
And what happened when the Spanish came? How did that impact the Inca civilization?
Well, what had happened when the Spanish arrived is the Incas had actually just been in a fairly brutal civil war. There had been two leaders, Atahualpa and Huáscar, who had a bit of a struggle for power. And as a result, there had been a war throughout the empire when Pizarro showed up with his roughly 200 men. So the country was in a bit of a state of division. The empire was fractured, and that's how the Spanish were able to get in and sort of align themselves with one side and take Atahualpa prisoner and eventually basically subdue the Inca Empire.
So 200 conquistadors really spelled the end of the Incans.
200 conquistadors subdued an empire that some experts estimate at its height had 10 million people.
From a practical point of view, to experience the ultimate of what's left of Incan civilization, I understand you use Cusco as sort of a hub, and then you hike the Incan Trail and you get to Machu Picchu. Tell us about Cusco.
Well, Cusco was the ancient capital of the Inca Empire, and it is, of all the settlements the Incas left all over the Andes, it is the settlement that is perhaps the most preserved. So you walk through downtown Cusco, and you're walking through alleyways that were built by the Incas. They might have Spanish roofs and adobe walls on top, but the bases of these buildings are inherently Inca. And so you really get a sense of what this must have been like in the 1500s when the Incas were running the place. And it's a very remarkable architecture. On top of that, the Incas were amazing engineers and could build these monumental structures without mortar. They would basically fit bricks one against the other so tightly that they would survive earthquakes, and you can't even slip a credit card in between two rocks. So the city is really, when you land there, you feel like you've arrived in an imperial city, and it's tucked into this little cradle in the Andes. You fly in, and you're literally like in this bowl, and Cusco actually means the belly button of the world. You're kind of entering this little nook in the Andes, and that was their base. So for a lot of visitors, that's how they access Machu Picchu, and it's a great introduction to the empire and to the history, and then from there, they continue on to the Sacred Valley.
Okay.
And Machu Picchu, either by hiking the Inca Trail or you can take a train all the way to the village of Aguas Calientes and from there visit the ruins.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Carolina Miranda, and she is the lead author of The Lonely Planet Guide to Peru. Okay, let's talk about the Inca Trail. The Inca Trail is actually a trail that is pre-Columbian, and it survives to this day.
Yes. In fact, the Incas, as I mentioned earlier, the Incas had roadways all over the empire. And this was one roadway that has become particularly famous because it leads directly to the ruins at Machu Picchu. And Machu Picchu it's such a special destination because the Spanish never found it. It's on the top of this Cloud Forest Peak, by the time the Spanish had arrived, it looks like it was probably covered in vegetation. So for several centuries, it kind of lay under this wrap of trees. And this roadway, it kind of ascends and descends through these Cloud Forest Peaks through a series of small Inca ruins and watch points and settlements and villages before landing at the big dog, which is Machu Picchu. You come over the ridge of the mountain and you see basically the entire city at your feet. And it's a 43-kilometer hike.
26 miles or something like that.
Yeah, it's about 26 miles, which doesn't sound like a lot when you look at it on paper, but you're going up and down mountains. And so it generally takes 3 to 4 days with altitudes of as high as 14,000 feet. So you have to be in good shape.
So paint a picture here, Carolina. You're halfway through this hike. You're dreaming about Machu Picchu. You're up at 12,000 feet above sea level. You're walking on a trail that was laid, the stones were laid centuries before the arrival of the Spanish conquistadors. What's it like? What do you feel? What do you hear?
Well, it's remarkable because I guess it's the things you don't hear. You don't hear traffic. You don't hear cell phones. You don't hear the buzz of radios. What you hear are the sounds of your own footsteps, the birds cackling in the cloud forest. It is a pilgrimage, and I think that's why it's such a popular hike. You are seeing a part of Peru as it has remained for hundreds of years. You know, you're not going to see any cars on the Inca Trail. This is exclusively a pedestrian experience.
The government is effectively preserving this and protecting it from development?
Yes, yes. And in fact, in recent years, the government has really cracked down because when I first went to this area of Peru in the 1990s, you could take 2 weeks to hike the Inca Trail if you wanted to. You could go by yourself, you could camp, you could stay at some of the sites for days. It was entirely unregulated. And at the time, there was very little tourism to Peru, so it almost didn't matter. But these days, Peru gets more than 2 million foreign visitors a year, and they all go to see Machu Picchu. So it's become issues of littering and overuse of the trail have become an issue. So several years ago, for example, the government started shutting the trail down in February, which is the rainiest month, to do trail maintenance and just basically to allow the vegetation around the area an opportunity to recover from all the visitors that go through.
2 million a year. So roughly 2 million see Machu Picchu. The classic way is to hike the Inca Trail. People who are not as hardy can take the train to a closer town. And how demanding is it physically for the easiest route?
For the easiest route, if you take the train to the village and then go up to the mountain, I mean, I've seen, you know, all the way from 3-year-old kids to grandparents do that. Machu Picchu itself lies at about 8,000 feet above sea level. So it's actually at a lower altitude than Cusco. So most people find it fairly easy to do day hikes around the ruin site. It's hiking the trail in that 3 to 4 day trip that requires much more physical sturdiness. What I would recommend is not going in July or August when it's at its peak and the trail is at the most crowded. While there are daily limits on the number of people that can go on the trail, it usually reaches its daily limit and you're there, you know, it's you on the trail with 250 other people, 300 other people. So it's not that pleasant. I think September and October, or perhaps April, if you don't mind maybe being caught in a rainstorm, you're going to get a lot more peace and quiet, and you're really going to be able to digest this magnificent experience. You know, these emerald forests and these coffee-colored peaks and these exotic birds. It really is a remarkable, remarkable journey.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're speaking with Carolina Miranda. She's the lead author of The Lonely Planet Guidebook to Peru. So, Carolina, you've been hiking on the Inca Trail, and you're descending into Machu Picchu. What do you see?
This is one of the Inca's most remarkable settlements. It's an entire citadel capping the top of a cloud forest peak. And by an entire citadel, I mean a miniature city. There's agricultural terraces where they grew their food. There's ceremonial buildings. There's public gathering areas. There's areas where the Inca nobility would have stayed. What makes it remarkable is two things. Is one, the architecture is just amazing. And because the Spanish never got their hands on it, it means that all of the stones that are there stayed there. They weren't used to build churches. They weren't used to build the viceroy's house. And it's also the setting. You are at the top of this unbelievable mountain, surrounded by mountains all around you and the rush of the Urubamba River below you. It really is like entering this other universe.
Why did they build Machu Picchu?
You know, there's a lot of conjecture about why Machu Picchu was built. Because the Incas didn't leave behind a written language and because the Spanish weren't aware that the city existed, there's a lot of mystery. People tend to think it was some sort of royal retreat because of the type of architecture that's there. It's the imperial style of architecture. It's the type of architecture the leaders would have built for themselves. It also happens to lie at a key geographic juncture with the Amazon on one side and the Andes on the other. So it could have been a part of an important trade route. So there's a lot of conjecture, but no 100% sure answers.
And as an expert on Machu Picchu, how would you recommend best experiencing the magic, the majesty of the site?
Well, I think my favorite time at Machu Picchu is first thing in the morning when the site first opens. They usually open the gates, I believe it's at 6:30 in the morning. And if you get in there at that time, there's a certain quiet. The area is still cloudy. You can hike around before the afternoon trains full of tourists from Cusco roll in and just get this real sense of peace. And by 9 a.m., the clouds start to lift. And if you position yourself up on a higher point on one of the terraces or you're able to climb the cone-shaped mountain to the side called Huayna Picchu, you can be in this point where you literally just watch all of these clouds lift and the city just reveal itself below you. It's a holy experience.
Just very quickly, I understand there's new restrictions on visiting Machu Picchu and getting tickets and so on. What's the latest on that?
Yes. The site ended up on the World Monuments Fund Most Endangered list because it was being loved to death, basically. And so the government has put very strict limits. So there's 2,500 people allowed a day at the ruined site. The tickets have to be purchased in advance. And I recommend to people buy them while you're in Cusco or from a travel agent in advance of your trip because you don't want to make that journey all the way there and then discover that you can't get into Machu Picchu.
So if you got a ticket, you got an appointment, there's no doubt you're going to have a magical experience.
Absolutely.
Carolina Miranda, one of the authors of The Lonely Planet Guidebook to Peru, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Ottoman Empire fell just over 90 years ago, so there's still plenty of impressive evidence of their opulence that you can see today in Turkey. A look at touring Ottoman sites in Turkey is coming up next on Travel with Rick Steves. We're at 877-333-RICK. Mm-hmm.